Hey there, I'm Jamin Baxter, and I serve Moody Radio as the Director of Business Development. Our team's job is to find businesses that love Moody Radio and Jesus Christ and want to support the work we do financially just like you. Today, I'd like to introduce you to United Faith Mortgage. Simply put, they are a faith-focused mortgage team serving clients across the United States. They've put together a team with Christian values, with faith and family at the core. They know that this is arguably the most important purchase of your life. Check out the top five things you should know about United Faith Mortgage at unitedfaithmortgage.com. Thanks to you and United Faith Mortgage for supporting Moody Radio.
United Faith Mortgage is a DBA of United Mortgage Corp., 25 Melville Park Road, Melville, New York. Licensed mortgage banker. For all licensing information, go to nmlsconsumeraccess.org. Corporate NMLS number 1330. Equal housing lender. Not licensed in Alaska, Hawaii, Georgia, Massachusetts, North Dakota, South Dakota, and Utah.
You might remember the song when you were a kid, I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Don't worry, I'm not going to sing it for you, but you remember it. And you remember even the joy it put on the faces of kids usually when they were singing it and enjoying that. You know, in a world where we are facing great challenges, struggles, and even a worldwide pandemic, it might be a great question to ask as a parent, how do I make sure that my kids' hearts are filled with joy? You know, there's a lot of talk today about being happy, but that isn't necessarily the same thing as joy. I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about that today as well as we discuss raising joy-filled kids and learning how to equip them with four helpful habits. That's our topic today. I'm Colin Lambert sitting in for Chris Fabry. Chris Fabry taking some well-deserved time off this week, and I'll be with you all week long. We've got some great things to talk about together, and I hope you'll engage in the conversation as well. Our guest today, Marcus Warner, president of Deeper Walk International, a former pastor, college professor who's written several books on topics ranging from studying the Bible to spiritual warfare to emotional healing and leadership. And Chris Corsi, an ordained minister, pastoral counselor, published author, and international speaker. He and his wife, Jen, lead and design the Thrive training program that uses brain-based exercises to train leaders, families, and communities in important relational skills. And we're talking today from the topic of getting some joy-filled lives in our kids, and specifically their new book together, The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids. Marcus and Chris, great to have you with us today. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Colin.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Colin. Thank you.
Hey, let's start. I'm going to just give folks a chance to meet you first and get to know a little bit more about you off of your off of the resume and on to your real lives, what's going on in your world. Marcus, let's start with you. Tell us a bit about your life, your family, where you live, all that sort of thing.
Yeah, sure. Well, I live in the Indianapolis area, and I have a wife of 31 years, and I've got two grown kids. One's 30. And one is 20, one is going to school at Taylor University, one's down at Asbury, so they're both doing well. And Chris and I actually were just together in Kentucky last week, and then after that I spent the week in Ohio speaking at a family camp, so just got back.
Very cool. Chris, what about you?
Yeah, my wife Jen and I have two sons, 9 and 11 years old. We live in Western Michigan, where just beautiful beaches, beautiful area. We love to get outside. And yeah, my wife and I are having fun, you know, building some joy in this fun stage of life that we're in.
I love that. And I love that now is the time that we're talking about it. I just mentioned a moment ago, we are in a culture right now that if kids are exposed to any kind of media at all, or even it comes to them through Facebook and Instagram and many other ways, there are so many pressures on our kids today, so much heaviness in our culture related to health, related to racial tensions, related to government tensions, related to all those things that we as adults are dealing with. You can imagine the kind of impact that's having on our kids. Marcus, why is it so important to you? What made you passionate about the idea of filling your kids with joy?
Well, what we're really after here is, in a sense, is maturity. And the idea here is the maturity to bounce back from difficult situations and the maturity to treat life as an adventure. Because there's so many things that you can be afraid of, because there's so many hard things out there, it's really easy for kids today to have their world shrink and get really small. And what we've learned is that the fewer emotions I can handle and bounce back from, the less joy that I live with, the smaller my world gets, the less adventure I have, and the more overwhelmed I am. So joy was just seemed like an essential component. And that's just one aspect. I could probably spend the next half hour just on that question, but it's yeah.
Chris, I mentioned the idea of happiness. There is, I'll tell you, just you look at teenagers, young adults, even young people today, you look at their social media again, which I think is just so pervasive in our culture and affecting so many of our young people today. There is a constant grasping for, searching for, seeking for what they call happiness. Is happiness and what you're talking about related to joy the same thing?
No, they're not. And this is a very important distinction that, you know, happiness is circumstantial. So I'm happy when a new movie's coming out that I've been waiting to see. So I'm happy about that. Joy is the relational glad to be together moment. So I have joy when I experience that moment together. I'm glad to be with you. So your brain makes a very important distinction between joy and happiness, because joy, we're wired for joy. So when you walk into the room and you see someone light up to see you, you hear it in their voice, you see it in their body, your brain actually grows and responds with relational joy.
And what you're talking about, and Marcus just relayed this a moment ago, what you're talking about really is helping develop your child's maturity. And through that, they're able to find joy. Marcus, what are some of the things? I know we're going to try to touch on most of these, but maybe as we begin, one of the things that we need to focus on as parents, helping our children face life in a mature fashion. And what age do you start? Do you start really, really young?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. So in our book, we actually have a separate chapter on what you do with infants, what you do with children, what you do with your adult kids, because obviously you're going to attack this totally differently. An infant can't return to joy from anything, right? If an infant gets upset, all they can do is fuss or whine or pout, you know, throw a tantrum. It's completely on the adult to see what's going on, meet them in that emotion, help them recover. When you get into that child level, what we're trying to do at that level is begin to coach them how to recover. So we take them through a very simple process. You begin with validating that emotion and then helping to make their problems smaller and more manageable. And the more often that we see where they're at, meet them in the emotion, make their problem more manageable so they feel like I can handle this, their brain begins to learn, okay, this is how you do it. And the goal is by the time we get most of the way through childhood that they've gotten really good at returning to joy from all kinds of upsetting emotions.
Chris, as we go through this time together today, I think certainly parents are already thinking about their own children. One of the things we know if we've had at least two children is that our kids are very different. Do these methods work on all kids, or is it something that's going to be different for boys versus girls, or certain personality traits that your kids have that may be very different?
That's an important question. And you know what? Every child is unique in his or her own way. But what we now know about how God designed the brain is every human brain runs on the fuel of joy. So every child's brain needs this relational, glad to be together joy. And as Marcus said, we also need to learn how to get back to joy from our big feelings. And so the beauty of this is while every child's unique, made in God's image, the foundational principles are the same. Sometimes we just have to adapt them to what best works for our children. So I have one son who's high energy joy, and it's easy for him to build joy. And I have another son who's not as good at the joy, but he's really good at the quieting. So the son who's great at joy needs a little more quieting practice. And the son who's really good at quieting just needs a little more high energy joy practice. So we can work these principles with all of our children, no matter what those differences are.
We're talking with Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi, and we're going to give you a chance to get involved in the conversation as well at 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675, the four habits of raising joy-filled kids. And when we come back in just a moment, what is the real connection between joy and maturity? And how is brain science that Chris was just talking about work into the solutions as well? That's coming up just ahead on Chris Fabry Live. If you're a Christian who's struggling to find a spark for your life, or maybe you feel that you've gone as far as you can on your spiritual journey, I want to recommend a book to you. It's called Yes, You Really Can Change: What to Do When You're Spiritually Stuck. And it's going to be yours as a gift for any amount in support of Chris Fabry Live. You can call 866-95-FABRY or go to chrisfabrylive.org to learn more. That book by Chip Ingram, and it's a good one. Again, the number 866-95-FABRY or chrisfabrylive.org. I'm Colin Lambert sitting in for Chris Fabry this week. Chris is taking some well-deserved time off for the summer, and I encourage you to get involved in the conversation today. Here's the number, 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. Our guests, Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi, we're talking about the four habits of raising joy-filled kids. A lot of that has to do with the topic of maturity. And Marcus, just a moment ago, you kind of hit on this, but I want to stick with it for just a moment. Can you tell us a little more about the connection between joy and maturity, and what you mean by these terms specifically?
Yeah, in another book I wrote with Dr. Jim Wilder, he's a expert in maturity development. We define maturity as enduring hardship well, and you're looking at, we all as parents want our kids not just to be happy. We want them to have successful relationships. We want them to be able to handle their big emotions. And not be afraid of those emotions, but actually be able to recover from them. So if you look at maturity as the ability to endure hardship well, we're specifically looking at the ability to handle hard emotions. And that means handling hard conversations, hard situations, and all the hard things that life hits us with, and yet not be so overwhelmed by those things that we can't get back to joy from them, and find that spark that allows us to still live with energy and still treat life like an adventure. And so maturity is key to all of that. And so joy and maturity are really actually inseparable. You can't talk about one without the other.
And Chris, you mentioned that brain science has informed your solutions on this that you offer in the book. Talk for a moment about that.
Yeah, you know, one of the amazing things that's happened in the last 20, 25 years is that as technology has advanced, we're able to study the brain more and learn more about how God designed the brain. And so what we now know is on the right side of our brain is what we can call a joy center. And this joy center in the brain, it grows in response to joy-filled relationships. So that means every time your brain sees somebody light up to see you, this part of the brain is getting stronger and stronger. And this is also the part of our brain that runs our identity. That means how we see ourselves should be anchored in relational, glad to be together joy. And so we know that, you know, how well we endure hardship, as Marcus said, really comes down to the level of joy that we have. And the good news is, no matter what our life has been, good, bad, or ugly, today can be an opportunity where we start purposefully growing relational joy.
Our phone lines are open at 877-548-3675. If you find yourself as a parent parenting your children and finding it hard to help them find joy in today's culture, maybe you're having some specific challenges in your children maturing like you'd like them to, or finding the joy in those times that they probably ought to be finding joy, feel free to call and we'll get our guest to comment on that as well. 877-548-3675. Marcus, tell us about this model. It's a fairly simple model, but it's very profound and very helpful, I know, in kids of all ages. So let's talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, we call it the ABCs of parenting, right? It's A, B, C, D. It's A is attunement, B is building bounce, C is correcting with care, and D is developing disciplines. And those four habits are at the heart of this. The first two habits relate to the right side of the brain. They are primarily the relational and emotional maturity habits. And then the second two, the correcting and the disciplining. What we mean by discipline is developing skills as opposed to developing those kinds of disciplines. Those two are more on the task side of the brain. And how do you get kids who aren't afraid to do hard things? How do you get kids back on path once they've gone, you know, on, in a wrong direction? And then the idea here is that this actually always happens in order, that the first thing we should do as a parent is always attune to our child. And that's about reading body language, noticing them, seeing what's going on, reading their faces, and meeting them in their emotions instead of expecting them to read our body language, read our emotions, and meet us where we're at. Too often we'll walk into a room and go, and we expect our kid to notice that I'm upset and attuned to me and make adjustments based on me, or I'll say something like, you won't like it if I get angry, which is just another way of saying, I actually don't have the maturity to act like myself when I get mad. So it attunement is really huge because it means we're going to start by connecting to where they're at emotionally, then we're going to try to help them bounce back from wherever they're at emotionally before we get into correcting and instructing. The exception to this would be a crisis. And so, you know, you're not going to take the time to attune before you say, well, how do you feel about stepping in front of that bus? You know, you're going right. In a crisis, you lead with the problem, but too many of us turn everything into a crisis by leading constantly with the problems and our big emotions about those problems instead of attuning to our kids.
So give us an example of how, you know, just some scenario of you walk in and you're wanting to attune to that child at that moment, and how do you move them from the attuning to the build bounce moment?
Yeah. Sure. So just first, I'll jump in, Marcus. I had
sure,
a
go
good,
ahead. Yeah.
I had a good opportunity this morning. We had our family has had a loss recently, and my sons, we shared the news with our sons this morning, and you know, we sat with them. We shared the sadness together. We didn't try to fix it. We didn't try to get them to snap out of it. We simply attuned by sharing the sadness. And as we were sharing the sadness and just validating, like, yeah, this is really hard, isn't it? What happens is their brain shifts from the sadness back to this relational, glad to be together, joy again. So my sons felt like they were connected. They weren't alone. All too often when children feel alone in their feelings and their upsets, that's when the feelings and the upsets become bigger and harder to manage. So we share the upsets, and together we learn to build bounce, or we bounce back to joy. And that means that, you know what, this is hard and this is sad, but I'm glad that we're going through this together. You're in this together, and I'm not alone, for someone is with me.
How do you move in those circumstances where it is necessary then into the correcting and the disciplines that you're working on together? Marcus, thoughts on the correcting moments? Because obviously, you're still wanting to attune, I assume, but maybe they're not bouncing back. Maybe there's issues there that need to be dealt with. What happens when you need to correct, and how do you do that?
Yeah. So once again, the age of the child has a huge bearing on this. You know, infants really don't need to be corrected. They just need to have their emotions calmed down. Once we get into the adult stage, also, the way that we correct kids looks very different. Like with my adult kids, I don't come in as the authority figure and just lay down the law with them, right? And so when we're dealing with children, the correcting means I have to first still start by recognizing what's going on with them emotionally, acknowledging that, and then moving forward. So, you know, for example, we had a situation where one of our kids admitted to cheating and came to us. This is a long time ago. And we had to, you know, deal with that. And, you know, it was like, where do we start? Do I start with my emotion or do I start with his emotion? And I'm like, well, you know, where are you at? You could tell that he was feeling shame, that there was some about this, but also a little bit of fear, like how is mom and dad going to react? So the correcting there was more, we had to, first of all, start with his emotion and then help him kind of manage that problem in terms of, you know, how making it small enough that he didn't feel overwhelmed by it. But then we gave consequences is that, okay, so here's the consequences because you admitted it, we're, you know, it won't be as serious as it would have been, but, you know, we're going to give you double the math homework for a week. And then, but we ended relationally by saying, but that's not going to change our plans for all the relational things that we got planned together as a family later. And so we ended with everybody happy to be together, even though consequences had been meted out. So it can look differently in a variety of different situations, but one other thing like I'll point out is that when you're correcting kids under age five, they don't really understand negative commands. They can read your body language and tell that you're upset. If you say, no, don't touch that, or if you say, don't hit your sister, their brains can't really process a negative command. What they hear is blah, 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 hit your sister. And so they're kind of depending on the fact that they can tell you're upset about this, but they've really are what they're doing is they're reading your body language, trying to figure out what do you mean when you say blah, 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 hit your sister. You don't really seem to mean that, but I can't tell what you're saying. Yeah. So we have to learn with our younger kids, especially, to give positive instructions like be gentle with your sister, put your hands down to your side. You know, and it's really hard. If you think about how hard it is to not just lead with that negative command, you can understand some of the frustration that they feel as they're trying to interpret what you're saying.
Yeah. Chris, both of you have mentioned a couple of times this idea of making the problem or situation seem less or smaller for the child. Can you expound on that for a moment?
Yeah, this is a very important principle that we learn to keep problems manageable and we learn to keep our relationships bigger than our problems. And you know, it's really a hard thing to do for parents because a lot of the times we go into situations focusing on the problem. So I go down to check on my son who is supposed to be cleaning his room. I walk in his room. I see that he's playing a game instead of doing his chore. So I'm recognizing, wow, okay, he's not doing what I asked him to do. And I might say to my son, I see that you're having fun there with your game. And he'll look at me, you know, probably confused a little bit because he knows he's in trouble. And I'll say, I see that that's important to you, but what are you supposed to be doing right now? And so part of the way that we keep relationships bigger than problems is we stay regulated with our own feelings, because if I go in there just blasting him because he's not doing what I asked him to do, there's not going to be a whole lot of redemptive value for him to learn. He's just going to learn not to make me mad. And so he, as Marcus shared in his example, there's still consequences to our children when they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing, which actually helps them learn. But we are basically regulating our own feelings as we interact with them and as we correct. And so what's happening is they still learn right from wrong, but they're also learning important relational skills along the way so that they can better manage what they feel. If they can't manage what they're feeling, there's going to be no redemptive value in the whole process. So we stay connected ourselves and relational as we help them stay relational, as we correct the problems that need to be corrected.
And what I'm hearing is parents have a lot to learn at the same time that the kids are learning as well. In fact, I think any of us who've been parents, I have three grown kids now, and as your parents, you learn those things. And often, even in the midst of talking to a child or disciplining a child or following through on something, you often, I did at least, have a spiritual vision of my relationship with God and how he must feel when I don't do those things that I should be doing. And that, to me, is one of the most amazing and powerful things about being a parent, is that parent-child relationship that we begin to get a glimpse of with our Heavenly Father as we deal with some of these issues with our kids as well. 877-548-3675 is our number, 877-548-3675. Maybe you have some kids right now of various ages you're dealing with, trying to figure out how best to do that. We'd love to hear from you, 877-548-3675. Marcus, let's talk for a moment about the developing disciplines. You were specifically saying it wasn't disciplining per se, but it was building healthy habits, if you will, good relational disciplines and healthy habits that will help these kids stay in line. Talk more about that.
Yeah, we're talking about skill building. And one you find is that if you want to be free to enjoy life, you have to have skill. Like if I sit down in front of a keyboard and I never develop the skills of how to play the piano, it's just a frustrating experience. But if I have developed that skill, if I've gone through the disciplines that it takes to be able to sit down at a keyboard and do whatever I want to on it, now all of a sudden I can be creative. It becomes an adventure. I have a level of freedom that I don't have unless I've learned that skill. So every parent is responsible for teaching their kids skills. And some of the skills we teach them, it starts with potty training and how to feed themselves, how to dress themselves, you know, all the rest. But some of those skills are, how do we deal with our emotions? How do we deal with our relationships? And we're specifically talking about helping kids who are experiencing overwhelming emotions learn, how do I quiet myself from those overwhelming emotions? What does that look like? I talked to a marriage counselor one time, heard from them that they said they and most of their marriage clients had no memories of a parent ever attuning with them and staying relational with them until they had recovered from their upsetting emotions when they were kids. As a result, they didn't know how to do it as parents, and they didn't know how to do it in their marriages. And one of the things we're trying to emphasize here is that the more time that you spend attuning to your child and helping them bounce back from these upsetting emotions by staying relationally engaged with them until the problem feels small enough that they can manage it. You know how we, have you ever had a kid come in and they were like in a argument with somebody and they came in upset? And you're like, okay, are you okay now? Can you go back and play? And they're like, and once you know that they can go back, you know they've recovered.
Yeah, exactly. We're talking with Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi. The book is The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids, and really it's about learning some important skills. So we're going to continue talking about that and get your calls, 877-548-3675. How do you help your children live joy-filled lives? Well, part of it is living some healthy habits out in your own life as a parent. And we're talking about that today with our guests Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi, authors of the book, The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids. And we're taking your calls as well at 877-548-3675, 877-548-3675. Any questions or comments you might have along that line as well. And I'm going to, guys, if it's okay, I'm going to pull in our producer, Trish, because we were just talking during the break, and she had an interesting challenge that she's having with her little ones, and I think it's probably something that you guys can comment on. Trish, tell us your story.
Sure. I have an 8-year-old daughter, a 6-year-old son, and a 4-year-old daughter. And my oldest has picked up the worst day ever, best day ever thing, but we mostly deal with the worst day ever. So this could be 8 a.m. where this has now become the worst day ever, and it ends up being like a self-prophecy. Or it can be the end of the day where she doesn't remember the good stuff that happened, and it's just overshadowed by this one bad incident that happened, and thus it was the worst day ever. So how do I help her through this? I know part of this is me. Like Colin was saying, it's me working on how I'm responding to what she's sharing. But how do I help her process this to see that it's not the worst day ever? Because I just get frustrated with her. It's not the worst day ever. Trust me.
Yeah. That's a good question. One of our sons was doing that when he was younger, and you know, one of the best suggestions I would have there is when your daughter says those things, to just start with some validation that, wow, that must be really hard, that this is already the worst day ever and it's only 8 a.m. And then I would follow up with, I wonder what would make this to be a better day. And so in a sense, you're validating, let's just, hey, you're feeling, she's feeling this way. She's got a feeling. If she feels like you understand her and see her and hear her, then what happens is this quickly feels more manageable. If you minimize it, like, oh, you're going to be fine. Then what happens is she feels more alone in this. So when we validate, I see you, this sounds really hard, but then followed up with, well, you know what? This is one of my best days ever because I get to be with you here and share this feeling with you. And so we followed up with a, you know, a question, what would make this better? Or even just a statement that I'm glad we can be together. If this is going to be such a bad day, I'm glad I get to be here with you. And I'll be curious to see what happens next. And so just, you know, what you're showing is I'm with you. I hear that. But you know what? There's more to the story. And with a little bit of curiosity, I can't wait to hear what you share tonight at the dinner table about what happened with your day. And so we're giving lots of opportunities here for good things to grow, even when it starts out in a pretty rough spot.
All right. Thanks, Chris.
Yeah. Thanks. Hey, want to ask this question because I think some parents may be feeling this even now as we're talking. What if you didn't do these things, if you didn't, as a parent, have these habits while raising your kids? Maybe they are now teenagers that are not joy-filled at all, not having those healthy habits of dealing with issues. Or maybe they're now adult children and you're looking back and thinking, I did not do these things well. What do you say to the parent today who's feeling that angst, even now, as we've talked through some of these examples, for processing that and then moving forward with their children at whatever stage they're at?
Yeah, that is very common because nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes. We all wish we'd done things differently, right? There's a very, very few of us who look back and go, hey, I wouldn't change a thing about the way I parented. But what happens, though, is when you do have kids who are like this, what we tend to do is we tend to focus on fixing them instead of actually understanding them. And I think it's at this point, the main thing we can do is try to create the idea that we are a safe person for them to talk about things with. And Chris mentioned validating. Validating is hard to overemphasize how important it is to start with validation when you're talking to people who are low joy, especially. And that is that you validate an emotion by naming it accurately and naming how big it is accurately. Now, the opposite of that would be minimizing an emotion. And we do this a lot. Like, you know, we call our kids drama queens and tell them to, you know, get over themselves. And we minimize their emotions and say, oh, get over it. You're going to be fine. Instead of actually taking the time to realize, no, this is a big emotion for them. So I want to acknowledge that emotion, acknowledge it. And my goal is to get them nodding their heads with me like, yeah, that's right. That's how I feel. You understand. And the more often a child feels like you understand their emotions and you're correct about how they're feeling, the more open to suggestions they're then going to be. So if you do have some correction, if you do have some suggestions, it will always be better received after validation.
877-548-3675 is our number, 877-548-3675. And let's go to the phone calls now. Kathy, you're listening in Tampa, Florida on WKES. Thanks for calling today. Your question or comment for the guys.
Florida. This question's for Chris.
All right.
You were talking about the disciplining relational circuit reaction to your son not doing his chore. And so my question is, by your relational circuit technique, will that eventually teach your son the responsibility in the future for him to do the same thing?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And so, you know, the context of me walking in on my child, he hasn't done his chore, and hopefully in that scenario, I'm able to stay relational. So I will, you know, I will say what I see, like, wow, I see that you're having fun with your game, but what are you supposed to be doing? And so at that point, you know, he needs to stop what he's doing. He's going to do the chore. And then after he does the chore, then we talk about that. Like, I see that you got distracted without doing your chore. Now what needs to happen here next time so that I don't have to come down here and catch you in the middle of playing when you're supposed to be working? So the goal here, as we're staying relational, because I might genuinely feel frustrated or mad because he's not doing what he was supposed to be doing, but I'm staying relational. And what that does is that basically shows his brain how to feel mad, how to be angry, and stay relational in the midst of the anger. And so what that does is actually keeps his whole brain working together. And when he has his whole brain working together, because he can have big feelings and yet he remembers who he is and what's important, lots of good things grow in that garden. So lots of good disciplines can grow. Lots of good skills can grow. Because the moment he is no longer relational in his big feelings, and what happens is his brain is now severely limited. So he becomes reactionary without purposeful. So one of the ways we help to really instill these skills and these habits in our children is as we, as parents, learn to better quiet when we get upset or better stay relational during the hard times. And as Marcus said, none of us are going to do it perfectly. And in fact, we can be guaranteed we're going to mess it up. But when we do mess up, we learn to get back to joy together. So I might even acknowledge, well, Daddy was too angry. I should have just stopped and taken a few minutes before I had that conversation with you. I'm sorry that happened. Next time I'm going to work better on my anger. And now you work better on you doing your chores. So as we learn to stay relational, more habits, good disciplines, and more good things will grow in that relational garden.
Kathy, thank you for calling today and hope that helps. Appreciate your call. Phone lines are open, 877-548-3675. Marcus, let's take that example that we just used with Chris and then take it to another level, maybe later childhood, tweens into teens, where this is habitual. This child has continued to get distracted when they're supposed to be cleaning their rooms or continued not to respond as you would want them, even after multiple times. Obviously, there are some kids that just tend to be a little more strong-willed, it seems, than others. What about a child that continually takes the mode of moving away from what you've asked them to do and continues to make their own choices in that sense? Any thoughts for folks in that position today?
Well, yeah, I think that I don't want people to hear that we're saying is that you don't ever actually give consequences to your kids. What we're saying here is the order in which the disciplining happens, the order in which we correct our kids. And that is, it's important for them to know that we care before we correct. And so it's important for them to feel understood as much as possible. If they simply won't talk to us and they won't let us in and they're putting up a wall, then, you know, you've done what you can, and now it's time for consequences. But you're doing your best to keep opening that relational door so that there's an opportunity for conversation later. That's the best I know to put it right now. It's like when kids aren't obeying, and they're not only not obeying, but they're hardening their hearts towards you, there's usually some level there where they have stopped trusting. And so part of what we're doing is not only trying to get them to behave, but we're trying to reestablish a trust-based relationship with them. And so we've got to find out, what is it that costs the trust? How did we lose the trust? What, you know, is there a way to get this back? Mm-hmm. And again, that tends to start by making sure that they feel like you really do see, you really do understand, you really do get what they're going through. And it's not enough just to say, I get it, I understand. Because sometimes just saying I understand almost sounds like saying shut up. I mean, it's like, yeah. You know, don't talk anymore, right? So that's why I'm just saying the order to this is what we're talking about, because my brain processes things from right to left. And if my right brain's shut down and it's in a cramp and I don't feel like myself and I'm not acting like myself, there's no way any correction is going to be successful. So all you're doing at that point is following through with the consequences you said them. But until their brains get back online, the odds of anything actually having long-term effect are very low.
Yeah, yeah, helpful. 877-548-3675 is our number, 877-548-3675. Carly, you're listening to WMBI in Chicago. If we could get your question, then we're going to come back and answer your get your question answered after the break. So why don't you go ahead and ask your question?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am 46. I have a 25 and a 23-year-old. 18 months ago, I separated from my children's father, who I was married to for 26 years. In February of this year, our divorce was final. In March of this year, he was diagnosed with He was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and then passed away last month. In the process of all this, my children have decided that because I left him and then he got sick, that I was responsible for his care and his estate and all these things. And I'm just wondering how to keep from having the relationship damaged permanently and yet kind of keep my distance because of the verbal assault they seem to keep coming at me with.
So sorry to hear about the situation, both situations, Carly. And if you'll hold on, we're going to get an answer for you coming up right after the break here. 877-548-3675. If you have a question or a comment, we're going to come back and answer Carly's question coming up in just a moment. Get some thoughts from Marcus and Chris. We're talking about the four habits of raising joy-filled kids. And your participation is desired. 877-548-3675. Stay with us. You know, at Chris Fabry Live, we're not claiming to have all the answers, but we're just taking our questions to the God who does have those answers. Each week, we're seeking God's wisdom on the subjects that matter. And thanks to the support of friends like you, we can keep these conversations rolling. Join us today by becoming a Back Fence partner at 866-95-FABRY or sign up online at chrisfabrylive.org. I'm Colin Lambert, sitting in for Chris Fabry today. Grateful you're with us. Four habits of raising joy-filled kids, our topic, our guests, Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi. And gentlemen, just before the break, we heard from Carly, who said that she had two kids, 25 and 23. In the last year, she had separated and then ultimately divorced their father. And then he found out he had cancer and passed away shortly after. And she's now dealing with some struggles with the kids who may even actually kind of be blaming her for this whole mess. And that doesn't sound uncommon when it comes to divorce. But Chris, maybe some of your thoughts.
Sure. You know, one of the best things I would do in this situation is try to get comfortable feeling misunderstood for a time. And so what that means is loss is the toughest pain for the brain to process. So the family's grieving a lot of loss. So what I would do is just practice validating and comforting, just acknowledging they're in a lot of pain and that you're sad that they feel that you're the source of all the problems. And I wouldn't try to explain very much. I would just continue to validate, comfort, and invite them to maybe get to see a counselor where we can all sit down and talk this through, but just really focus on being able to acknowledge this is a this is a brutal, excruciating loss, and it hurts like nothing else, but you're sad that they're pointing the finger at you. And so I would really get, it's going to take some time. This is not the kind of thing that has a quick turnaround, but be yourself, stay relational throughout this process. And Marcus, you have some thoughts to throw at that?
Well, I'd agree with what you're saying. I think that the temptation here is to try to figure out how am I going to fix this situation and get them to change their narrative about me. And there is no quick way to do that. So what you have, the only option really is to keep the try to keep the relational doors open. And it can be very helpful to get a third party involved when the communication breaks down. And especially when there's decisions that need to be made. It could be helpful to have a third party involved in that so that they can help to help everybody navigate these decisions better. In the meantime, yeah, I think what Chris said is wise. there is also no way to fix some of these really big broken things. So what we're trying to do is keep keep the relational doors open. And again, a good tool there is validating their emotions. Also recognizing what emotion this is triggering in you. Is it causing fear? Is it causing shame? Is it causing disgust? You know, what is it causing anger? Figuring out what emotion is it causing for you, and then begin working on how do you bounce back from those emotions so that you're not being controlled by those emotions when you do have conversations with them.
Carly, thanks for your call today. We appreciate it. Let's go to Chris. Chris, you're in Carmel, Indiana, and you're listening on WGNR. Your question or comment today?
Hi. I'm going to switch my question a little bit from my introductory there. I noticed that I get angry more now that when I'm disciplining my kids because I'm frustrated a little bit. Obviously, that comes a little bit because of my wife and I don't see on the same page in disciplining. So my kids are 5 and 6, and I'm trying to figure out what just the basic tools. How do I connect with them to have results when I'm trying to show them that what they're doing or not doing needs to change? And if my wife doesn't always agree with what I'm doing, how I can get her on the same page without obviously disrupting our own relationship.
Chris, your thought?
Yeah, that's a great question there. It's a difficult situation, and it's helpful to know that your brain will do what it's learned to do, what it's trained to do, good, bad, or ugly. And so the good news is you, with a little practice, you can learn to stay relational. And keep in mind, teaching with kids happens better when we're not upset. So having these conversations when we're not upset and being able to share expectations, and you know what, even helping your kids to interpret. Yeah, dad gets really mad at these scenarios. You don't need to go into all the reasons why necessarily, just acknowledging that dad's going to work on, you know, being calmer in these situations. But how can we work together? So staying relational with them and helping them to interpret your responses and having those conversations when we're not upset, and finding what's mutually satisfying with your wife. And those are good conversations to have. How can we come up with a plan here that we're both happy with? And sometimes that takes that third partner, that third face sometimes to sit down and walk us through and help us find a good solution there to keep those joy levels high.
Marcus, a quick thought, about 30 seconds here.
Yeah, it's important two words, validate and vision. And that is, start by validating the emotions and by casting a vision for the success you want to see them experience, so that they understand why you need to correct their behavior. You're correcting them because you want them to be successful. Mm.
Joy-filled kids, I think we all want them. We need to learn some of those four habits for raising them, and you'll find that in the book, The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids, from our guests Marcus Warner and Chris Corsi. Gentlemen, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate having you both on today.
Thank you, Colin.
Hey, tomorrow on the program, we're going to talk a little bit about what you do when you're a parent, when you learn that your child has a chronic disease. I face this in my own life. I'll tell you a little bit about my story. You may have a similar story or know someone who does. I encourage you to tell them to tune in. Lots we can learn, I think, from dealing with chronic illnesses in our lives, because they do affect us all. So appreciate you being with us today. And remember, just give a quick prayer for Chris Fabry that he gets some good rest and relaxation with his family this week. He will be back next week, and I'll be with you through the rest of this week. So great to be with you today. Chris Fabry Live is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of the Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you tomorrow.